Our episodes deal with serious and often distressing events. If you or someone you know is suffering, don't hesitate to reach out to your local crisis center. Please see the show notes for this episode for suggested links and numbers to confidential assistance, and a more detailed list of content warnings, available via your streaming app or the website. Thank you. Hello again. Get comfy and prepare yourself for another episode of
The Nightmare Society.
This happened to me almost 7 years ago. I should give some background info before getting into things. At the time all this happened, I was around 16 years old, and I had a friend I'll call Karen, who was dating a boy named John. At this point in time, Karen and John had been dating for maybe 6 months, and after going out with Karen and John on many occasions, they decided that they wanted to hook me up with John's friend, Cameron. At this point in time, I had met Cameron in person once. He was nice, so I gave him my social media and we chatted a couple of times. It's important to note that he didn't have my phone number or know where I live. Now, fast forward to one night, maybe a week or two after I met Cameron. I'm lying in bed. It's about 2 or 3 in the morning, and I get a call from an unknown number. Thinking, why the heck is an unknown number calling me at this time of night? I decide to answer it and see who it is. So I answer the phone and say hi, and the man responds back saying hi.
Hi.
Since I did not recognize the voice on the other end, I ask the person who they are. Instead of giving me an answer to this question, the man on the line tells me to look outside my window.
Look outside your window.
Thinking this is probably a prank call, I tell the man to F off and hang up the phone. Once I did this, the number calls back again. I didn't answer it. The person then proceeds to call me another 4 times until I finally answer the phone, which again I ask who the heck is calling. This time the person responds and tells me that one of my friends gave him my number, and he's the guy that I've been talking to. At this point, my stupid 16-year-old mind is trying to rationalize this, and the only person I can think of is Cameron. Before I can say anything to this person, he again tells me to look out my window. He's outside, and I begin hearing noises outside my window. Now, I should mention that my room is right beside my parents' room, and being stupid, my first thought was that this fool was going to wake them up, and I'd never hear the end of it. Let me tell you, though, that thought soon turned into the last thing I would worry about that night. Anyway, at this point, I'm also starting to get creeped out. I'm thinking to myself, okay, if this is Cameron and Karen did give him my number, how the heck would he know where I live? So I reply to the man and say, Cameron? The man says yes and tells me to look outside my window. I reply telling him to go home and hang up the phone again. Weirded out now, I decide I'm going to get up and go into my basement and call Karen, so that hopefully my parents don't hear me talking from my room. This is really important because to get into my basement, I have to pass a door that is partially made of glass. So I get downstairs and call Karen. She answers, clearly half asleep. I tell her about the unknown call, which I'm assuming is from Cameron, and how he's telling me to look out my window because he's outside. And on top of all this, that I can hear someone out there. Karen, now clearly awake, tells me she's never given Cameron my number or address, and calls John quickly from her home phone to see if maybe he did. At this point, John answers and tells Karen that not only had he never given my information out, he is with Cameron at that moment. They tell me if someone's outside, I need to hang up and call the police immediately. So I hang up the phone, and before I can even get to dial anyone, I get another call from guess who? Unknown number. So I stupidly answer again, and before I get a word in, the man tells me,
I know you're in the basement.
He must have seen me walking through by my back door. Now I'm clearly disturbed, as I did just walk by my back door to get downstairs, so I know someone is outside. Again, before I could say anything, the man tells me to come outside. So stupidly, I tell the person I'm calling the police and hang up the phone. Why I didn't just call the police at this point, I really don't know. Probably because I was 16 and literally in panic mode. Not more than a minute later, I get another call. Unknown number. I answer again. The man tells me to come outside or he's coming inside to get me. Clearly panicking at this point, I have this deep gut feeling that if I go outside, I'm never coming back. However, I do have to go by the door again to get it back upstairs. And that was equally terrifying for me. So I hang up the phone again and muster up the courage to run upstairs because the last place I want to be was in a part of my house where no one else was. I get more calls. Unknown number, unknown number, unknown number. I finally answer again. This time the voice on the phone sounds shook and says to me that the police stopped him outside my house and want to speak to me to make sure I know him. The phone then gets passed off to someone who identifies themselves with the name of some title I no longer remember and asks if I know the man outside my address. He says my house number and street. I quickly tell the voice on the phone I don't have any idea who the person calling me is, and I hang up the phone. I never got another call again. However, I did sit there all night long holding a bat and had problems sleeping for months. I didn't have a bunch of good friends at this point in my life, and looking back on this night, I thought maybe this was a prank taken too far. However, I begged the few friends I did have for months to admit that one of them were the person who pulled this off. And to this day, they all insist that none of them did this. So whatever got this person to stop calling me? Thank God. And to the unknown caller, that's not me. Was what you might call the right hand for my boss who owned the motel that I worked for, technically as head housekeeper, but I had recently begun training to run the full spectrum of the motel, including all things office and front desk, overseeing staff and minor maintenance so that my boss could take a vacation. It was a 42-room mom and pop place set back off the road, so it was pretty peaceful for the most part. There was still a few motley ones every now and then, but that's at any motel in small town USA. But as intimidating as the new responsibility sounded, with only two other staff members to worry about, it was a cakewalk. The day comes for the boss to take her leave, and I'm now in charge of her life's blood, sweat, and tears, and pumped for the opportunity to show what I was made of. She left Friday morning, and the rest of the day ran like clockwork. Until around 8:30 that night. I also lived on the property in an apartment which allowed me to run back and forth to the office for guest check-ins and any office duties I needed to tend to. So when the ring the doorbell alerted, I looked at my phone and saw an older gentleman, early 60s maybe, staring through the door looking for an attendant. I spoke through the camera to let him know I'd be there in 30 seconds and started my way to the office. As I would with any guest while checking them in, I made small talk about his trip and gave the lowdown on where the good food was in town. I got him squared away in the computer and showed him how to get to his room. As he was getting his credit card situated back in his wallet, I thanked him for staying with us and called him Mr. Logan. He looked up at me and smiled and then said that I should call him Joe and made his way out of the office. Less than 30 minutes had passed, and I get a call from room 135, Joe's room. He proceeds to tell me that he would like to use the desk lamp, but there's no light bulb in it, and could he please get one, which immediately threw up a red flag, because I had cleaned that room myself, and I made it a habit to check every light bulb in the room, and I know for a fact the light bulb was there, because I used the desk lamp as I was cleaning. I told him I would bring one down, and he immediately said he would rather come to the office to get it. The office was attached to an apartment-type space that my boss lived in during the week, and it was very dark in the back, and set up in a way that would have made it very difficult, if not impossible, to see through the door to the apartment. Considering I was the only employee on the property, having him come to my very secluded office in the dark was not going to happen. I felt more comfortable taking it to his room. This was an old drive-up style setup, where I knew there were other guests around that area that were sitting outside and could help me if I needed it. So when he says he'd rather come to the office, I told him I would have to bring it to him, because my boss would kill me if I made a guest change a light bulb. He says he understands, and I breathe a little easier. He's not going to get me cornered in my secluded office to do God knows what. I grabbed the light bulb, and before I could get out the front door, I look, and there he is looking through the glass door, staring me down in the most unsettling way. The hair on the back of my neck stood up, and I physically started shaking. I opened the door and just said, "Let's get your lamp working," and started walking past him. He then said he thinks he forgot to sign his credit card receipt, and can we go double check? I tell him I had already dropped the receipt, but I would check it in the morning and get it from him if I needed it. That was total crap. He made a big deal about finding his good pen to sign with it. We both know he signed it. With that rejected idea, we continued to his room. As I walked in, I kicked the doorstop wedge that I had brought with me under the door so it wouldn't close without assistance. And, had he tried, I would have had time to call for help from the guys next door to him. I think he figured that out and moved away from the door. As I put the bulb in the lamp and turned to leave, I noticed the original light bulb halfway sticking out from under the couch pillow. I picked up my pace, chose to say nothing, and left. I made sure that he didn't see where I went, because I sure didn't want him to know that I lived there, or which apartment was mine. 30 minutes later, and the phone rings again. Of course, it's Joe. This time, he would like extra coffee for in the morning. I tell him that I'm unable to get to the housekeeping supply room because the housekeeper accidentally took it home. Total lie, but I wasn't going to go back over there. He had me legitimately scared. He called two more times that night, but I changed my voicemail to the motel's information and let him leave a message. I never even checked them. Bad customer service for my first night running the place alone, but I really didn't think my boss would entertain the idea of penalizing me after she heard the whole story. The next morning starts out as quiet as usual. I was running audit when Joe shows up at the door. I wasn't scared this time because one of my housekeepers was getting coffee in the kitchen, and I had people coming and going, checking out. Joe asks me to go to breakfast with him. I explain that I'm on the clock and I have a business to keep afloat for my boss, but I thank him for the offer. I'm not exactly sure what went down in the next 2 hours because I was working, but somewhere in there, Joe's car quit working. He was trying to go to the next town over, which is significantly bigger than my town, for one reason or another. Anyway, he starts getting unreasonably angry that his car won't start, saying things like,
"How am I supposed to do this without a damn car?"
and whatnot. Then it dawns on him that there's a car dealership next door, and starts off in that direction. But before he gets too far away, he sees me coming out of her room and says,
"You're gonna marry me. Just wait and see. We're going to Vegas."
All while smiling and chuckling. So I chuckled too, because there's no way he's being serious. I hoped. I continued on with my day. About 5 hours passes and I get a phone call from the dealership asking if Mr. Logan had checked out. I said he was booked for one more night, and he proceeds to tell me that Joe took a car for a test drive and was supposed to turn it in 30 minutes, but had not and is not answering phone calls. They asked if I could check his room to see if his belongings were still there. I obliged. I opened his door after knocking with no response and found the room completely destroyed. Papers all over the place, trash on the floor, pictures off the wall, the whole nine. But I wasn't sure if the papers were something he would come back for or if he bailed and just left that stuff behind. Aside from the papers, the only other personal belongings were a pair of swim trunks and a pair of socks. Again, was that worth coming back for? So I tell the dealership that I'm not 100% sure he's coming back, and they call police. After another couple of hours, the police show up at the motel, Joe in tow. I had decided since he had paid up until the next day, I would just leave his stuff in there in case he returned. which I honestly didn't think would happen. He goes in and starts taking his things out of the room. That's when the cop comes up to me, and being a small town, he knows me and pulls me aside. He tells me that I need to thank God every night that I'm still alive, well, and here. I'm like, okay, but what makes you say that? And he tells me, that man had every intention of taking you with him tonight and going somewhere you'd never be looked for. He also tells me that he doesn't know that the guy would have let me live, and that he's a sick man. They're taking him to a psych eval and then to the county if he's okay for general population. He then says that I should call my boss and let her know what was happening and maybe take my own vacation for a few days, just in case they can't make the car theft thing stick, since the dealership no longer wanted to press charges given his psychological state, and that was technically the only law he broke. They also said they would patrol the motel every hour or so to check in on me if he's released. I was completely taken aback by this whole ordeal, and to this day I wonder how he planned on getting me out of there, and what he was going to do if he did. He was released after 24 hours, but I never saw him again. And I'm okay with that. So Joe, let's not meet again. The following story mentions depression and self-harm, so for those sensitive to these subjects, I would forego the rest of the podcast today. Thank you. So this story starts in 2009 when I was a junior in high school. I lived in a small town in Ohio. In the fall, I started to date my first real boyfriend, John. John was a senior and many of his friends were dating my friends, and he's well-liked and funny at school. I'm thrilled about the relationship, especially because my strict parents seem to like John as well. He's pretty quiet around them, but always polite and appreciative in their presence. Since it's a small town, John lived literally down the street, and we hung out all the time. My parents were actually getting divorced at the time, so I liked spending time at his place more than mine. John lived with Chris, a man who wasn't his biological dad, but someone he had lived with since around the age of 13, and often called Dad. Chris was an adolescence counselor who knew John because he had seen him in foster care, and he had taken John in. Chris was an amazing human who was fun to be around, and it was just the two of them and their pug Murphy at the house. I didn't know much about John's childhood at first, other than it had been clearly rough enough for him to be involved in children's services. Anyways, we spent a lot of time together and always had a good time with Chris as well. Eventually, John confided in me that he had often had suicidal thoughts. I was shaken by this and told Chris about it as well. We continued to date and I did my best to support him. So the next year I'm a senior and John has graduated, but he's not really doing anything. He didn't go to college and his plans to join the military weren't working out. So he's just living with Chris and working a part-time job that my dad had gotten for him. I've always been into school and extracurriculars and I felt like John was kind of holding me back. Our relationship was going downhill in many ways, but I was scared to break it off. Scared that if I did, John might really kill himself. He had threatened to do so when I tried. In May 2011, I graduated high school and decided I had to leave the relationship behind. I was having my own depression issues, and John was having a detrimental effect on my mental health. But I finally told him we had to break up, and he needed to stop contacting me and threatening self-harm. I mostly cut off contact. And a couple of months later, I got an apartment with a friend about 30 minutes away from home and beside the college I was attending. One Friday night in April 2012, I'm in my hometown to see a friend, and I pass John's house where I see police cars everywhere. I'm shocked, and I assume John must have attempted to off himself. So I immediately call our mutual friend Kyle. Kyle has no clue what's going on with John, and he says that John and him had hung out at his house the day before. Kyle said John seemed like he was in a good mood, especially because he was driving Chris's Beamer at the time, which he loved to do. Anyway, Kyle is actually chilling at my apartment with my roommate. This is normal, as he had a crush on her. So I just keep driving that way. When I get to my place, Kyle hasn't heard anything, but my mom calls me with the scoop. She's friends with cops' wives, small town stuff. It turns out that John murdered Chris. He was on the run somewhere. Someone had called for a wellness check after not hearing from Chris for a while, and the cops found his body at home. I was shocked and a little scared, as were Kyle and my roomie, so we all decided to stay at my roommate's parents' house for the night. By morning, the cops had luckily found and arrested John. He had taken the Beamer, so it was easily spotted at a rundown motel about 15 miles from his home, about 12 miles from our apartment. When the details came out, the whole thing was even more horrifying. It was a brutal homicide, and it had occurred days before the body was found, which means that John was just hanging out at Kyle's house between committing this act and getting arrested, just nonchalantly playing video games, telling jokes to Kyle's little sister, acting like everything was fine. Meanwhile, he had stuffed Chris's body in their freezer at home. It's insane to think about how someone could just be such a psychopath. And there was really no explanation given. John initially tried to plead insanity, but he was eventually deemed competent and then pleaded guilty. He got 30 to life in prison. I've obviously told this story from my perspective, but the person who really matters in this is, of course, the victim. Chris was truly a saint of a human being. He had been my role model for so many years, and you just wonder how could something so horrific happen to someone so good, and at the hands of someone that they had given everything to. Someone they had loved, trusted, and seen as a son. It's horrifying. Chris spent his life advocating for kids like John, and the local center he worked at is actually named after him now, as is the street that it's on. As I said to begin with, I often wonder about the why of it all. Chris and John got along almost all the time, and though John clearly had mental health issues, no one thought he would ever hurt anyone but himself. But clearly something was very wrong with John that we missed. They say hindsight is 20/20, and I can definitely look back and think of a few strange instances with John. Sneaky, manipulative, and angry. He eventually showed all of those traits, but I was lucky enough not to experience any violence at his hands. I wish I could say the same for Chris. I'm thankful for the time I did spend with him and the positive impact he had on my life during that time. I know he had a positive effect on so many other lives as well. May he rest in peace. Thanks so much for listening, and until next time.
Sweet.